Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom. On the programme tonight, the US backs an Indian and South African demand to relax patents of COVID vaccines to try and enable greater access for these life-saving vaccines during this COVID period. On the show tonight, will this change the landscape of vaccination around this world, particularly in poorer nations, including our own? Or will it be impossible to implement just because of the complex process of manufacture involved? This is all perhaps desperately required more vaccines. It really depends on how you get them. But one way or the other, more vaccines will be required at a time when India is seeing record numbers, both in terms of number of cases, 4 lakh cases approximately in 24 hours, and 4,000 deaths as well in approximately considerable deaths in that same time period. Joining us on this program to look at the entire patent process and whether generic brands, generic drugs of COVID vaccines can become a reality, Kiran Mazumdar-Shaw, Dr. Randeep Goleria, and Dr. Srinath Reddy. But before we get to that, there's a huge concern now on the spread of variants or mutants of the original COVID variant across the country. Let's take a look on what we know so far. Several key questions are being asked about the mutants or the variations of the COVID virus, which are now circulating around India. So let's try and explain what exactly it was. It was called the SARS-CoV-2 virus. That, of course, was first detected in Wuhan in China. But as in the case of all resilient viruses, there is a process of changes or variations or mutations being formed. And that is very much the case over here as well. Now, of course, the SARS-CoV-2 virus spread all over the world. But let's talk a little bit now about this. The UK variant, it's called B117. It was first detected in Kent in the United Kingdom. Let's talk about the India prevalence, because this actually started spreading a great deal across India. Now, these are just the top 5 states: Delhi, Punjab, Telangana, Maharashtra, and Gujarat. And there were lots of samples which were collected, and these were put through gene sequencing. 1,877 samples collected by the 4th of May. But the belief is, and this is what the government actually has to say, is that the spread of that UK strain is actually going down a great deal. Instead, what we are seeing is what is being referred to as a double mutation. In other words, what's called B1.617. Now, why is it called a double mutation? Because other than other variations, which as we mentioned is normal, it's got 2 specific ones which actually enhance its transmissibility of moving into human beings. This has been detected first in India, in Maharashtra. Let's talk about the India prevalence, in other words, the top 5 states: Delhi, Gujarat, Karnataka, Punjab, and Telangana. So, as in the case of the UK strain, it's actually broadly the top 5 states are more or less the same. So, that has made it actually difficult to tell what the difference in the medical issues are. What are some of the symptoms which people of the UK strain have, which people of the India strain don't have, for example? That's unclear because they come in the same geographic area. And the total number of samples which have been collected are not enough yet to determine that. But here's what we know in terms of medical conditions of what the original SARS-CoV-2 virus was: transmissibility. Now, in the past, in say a family of 10, 2 to 3 people would actually get infected. Now, in both of these mutant strains, transmissibility is much more. So in a family of 10, 8 to perhaps even all 10 would get infected. If you look at the old strain, detection would come 3 to 5 days after contracting the virus. In the new strains, it could come as early as a day after contracting the virus, or 2 days. Let's look at recovery. The old strain used to take more time for recovery, between 10 and 14 days in many cases. The new strains, you are seeing a large number of cases where people recover faster, between 8 to 10 days. Now, what about age profile of patients? Earlier on, if you were older, between 50 and 60 or even more, you were perhaps more vulnerable over here. Even those between the ages of 40 and 50 are more vulnerable. This is what doctors are actually telling us. We spoke to doctors in Mumbai, in Bengaluru as well, and in Delhi. This is what their clinical evidence appears to show. But we're going to return now to our big focus, that focus on patents, with the United States indicating that they are ready to waive patents, intellectual property rights on COVID vaccines. The goal is to help cheaper and wider distribution of jabs through generic brands of the same drugs. Now, the U.S. has backed a proposal moved to the World Trade Organization by India and South Africa. India has reacted. They say that they hope that the World Trade Organization will quickly approve the waiver. Now, rich nations have been accused of hoarding COVID vaccines. Poorer nations with less financial muscle have been unable to get them in the right numbers. Now, pharma giants are expected to oppose the waiver. Already, the stocks of several leading pharma companies have begun tanking after this American announcement. The European Union says it's ready to discuss the US proposal pragmatically. So really, it's about intellectual property rights and patents versus the need to try and get the vaccine across, perhaps in a generic brand, as soon as possible to as many people as possible. But is that realistically possible at all in a finite period of time? Joining us now, Dr. Srinath Reddy and Dr. Randeep Guleria. Dr. Reddy, let me come to you first. Do you believe it's a good idea? Obviously, we want the vaccine to be out to as many people as possible. But the danger is that if you wait for generic brands, you'd end up waiting for perhaps even close to a year.
Well, I don't think we ought to be waiting. But nevertheless, this move is very welcome. Even as we do our best to contain the transmission of the virus by public health measures and speed up our vaccination with whatever are available currently in stock as well as going to be imported, I believe the access to technologies free of patents is going to enable us to produce many more vaccines at larger scale in the months to come. And since this pandemic is not going to be disappearing in 1 or 2 months, it may actually resurface or get prolonged. I believe we need access to these vaccines as well as other technologies which are absolutely important for combating the COVID pandemic. The India-South Africa proposal, while it draws a lot of attention to vaccines, it's not limited to vaccines.
Correct.
It is also covering medicines and other technologies. And there's so many new medicines and interventions that are coming up and are on the anvil. Even there are new vaccines that are coming up on the anvil. So I believe this is a platform that we ought to use in order to empower many of our firms to produce more of the vaccines, possibly newer ones, as well as several of the drugs and other interventions that are required,
sure,
without being fettered by the patents.
Dr. Guleria, you know, in the past, India has taken a lead when it came to generics, for example, in HIV/AIDS medication, where we had generics, brought down the costs, and saved any number of lives around the world. We'll never know how many millions of lives they would have saved. But then there's the entire issue of intellectual property rights and the fact that somebody has done research. They've put in a lot of money in getting these drugs out in the first place. How does one balance that and the present situation in your mind?
So that and the present situation is different. At that point in time, there wasn't a pandemic with so many lives at stake. So I think this is something which needs to be done. It's very, very important because if you look at it, there has been a lot of vaccine nationalism, and there is a need for us to look at the pandemic as a global phenomenon. And the reason why I feel this is very important is that, like we just mentioned, the variants will emerge in areas where there is more and more viral replication. And unless we are able to deal with the pandemic at a global level, we will have variants emerging in different areas of the world where vaccination is not that rolled out. And they will spread to other parts of the world and thereby causing newer outbreaks globally. Therefore, we have to look at the global picture and also understand that there are countries where there is a lot of vaccine hoarding. For example, 65% of the vaccines currently have been ordered by five major countries, including the European Union, whereas Africa hardly has any vaccines available for it. And therefore, we need to really look at it in a holistic manner, because unless we're able to really vaccinate everyone in a holistic manner, we will not get over this pandemic. We will have newer and newer variants emerging. Many of them will develop an immune escape mechanism and the efficacy of the vaccine will come down. Therefore, I think this is something which is essential. All the pharma industry should look at the good that they are going to cause, and this will help their economy in the long run, because once we're able to get over the pandemic, a lot of things, including the economy, will come back to normal. Also, there is going to be a need to really tweak vaccines as we go along, mm-hmm. because the variants will will evolve, and we will need to really have research to be able to do that. If you are able to make generic companies come out and start manufacturing in a large way, then this will also be something that can be done much faster, and a better, a larger rollout can be done. So I think this is a time where both research and production needs to be done at a global level. Researchers need to come together and share data, work on developing newer and newer technologies, newer vaccines, share data as far as the mutants are concerned. But at the same time, the industry needs to partner with that and really look, not look at their profit, but look at how they can really help in saving lives, not only in one area, but in the entire world. Because large parts of the world are not covered by vaccine even today.
Sure. Dr. Reddy, you know, let's talk a little bit about some of the drugs involved other than just vaccines. We have a real crisis in this country when it comes to essential medication used to treat COVID patients. Dr. Guleria has warned us in the past about when you can and you cannot use it, but the fact is it's all in short supply. Had there been more generics now, would that situation have been resolved?
Certainly. I agree with Dr. Guleria that we ought to ensure that the medicines are used in a rational manner and not necessarily prescribed in a haphazard manner. But we do need medicines, and there are several new medicines also which are likely to come up. And unless we have the capacity to produce them in large quantities as generic medicines, which are going to be low priced but quality assured, we will have a great deal of difficulty in treating very sick patients at the right time. And therefore, it's a life-saving issue that we are really addressing. And I believe the waiver of patents, even for medicines, is absolutely essential if we are really going to be serious about ending this pandemic and saving the maximum number of lives. If it is believed truly that no country is safe till every country is safe, then we must indeed ensure that no population is deprived of access to life-saving interventions, whether they are public health interventions or clinical interventions. And we know that things like monoclonal antibodies, polyclonal antibodies, and a number of other new vaccines too, for example, the mucosal vaccines, all of them are on the anvil, and other medicines are also being developed. And if we do not have access to those when they are coming out, and if there are proven efficacy, the whole world should benefit from that. I don't think we should set up roadblocks to that kind of a global application.
All right. Well, let's see how fast all of this can roll out. It's a huge proposal. The backing of the United States important at the WTO. I'd like to thank you both very much for being with us. The bottom line is this. The vaccines are needed now. The medicines are needed now. If there are generics which are allowed to come in on the basis of relaxation of intellectual property norms, which is mandated by the WTO, how is it actually going to translate from the clearance on a piece of paper to the actual process of manufacture? How much time will it take? I spoke to Kiran Mazumdar Shaw earlier today. Joining us now for her views on what the U.S. has done and how it could possibly translate, Kiran Mazumdar Shaw. Thanks, ma'am, very much for being with us. So it's a difficult call. Everybody wants to save lives. Pharma companies obviously want to. Governments want to as well. But is this call by the United States to waive patents in this present situation tenable for the pharma industry?
Well, Vishnu, first and foremost, it is politically the right statement to make, but whether it will have the intended impact is the big question, because let's face it, patents right now are not the stumbling block. What is a stumbling block for vaccine production are raw materials and consumables, which I think really there is an acute shortage of. And I think there is also another whole issue to be addressed, which is really the global capacity to produce vaccines. These are the stumbling blocks, not patents at the moment. Why do I say this? Because if you think about it, You know, yesterday I was on a panel discussion where Dr. Tedros of WHO said that over 1.1 billion doses have been deployed in higher income countries. And of these 1.1 billion, only 0.3% of the lower and middle income countries' population has been vaccinated. So you can see that there is a huge amount of vaccine inequity in the world. And that's where this huge demand for patent waiver is coming from.
Right.
I think we need to address, vaccine equity and equitable access to vaccines, which is really the real, problem in the world today. So by just saying that you're waiving patents, what does it mean? Because let's face it, even in India today, we have had access to many, many patented vaccines, whether it is Novavax, whether it is J&J, whether it is, the Oxford vaccine, and I'm sure there'll be several others. So I think it is not about patents for us. It is about capacity. Even if we wanted to make mRNA vaccines in India, let's face it, Moderna itself had suspended its patents. So nothing stood in the way of an Indian company coming and trying to produce a generic version of Moderna's vaccine. But that is not the case. The case is that mRNA vaccines have a very, very different technology platform. And to just basically reproduce the platform and produce the mRNA vaccine is very time consuming. I don't think people realize how difficult it is to produce these biologics. And even if you could start now, let me tell you, it will take you a minimum of a year to even be able to scale up such vaccines.
Right.
So I think we should be realistic.
What about some other vaccines, ones which are easily a non-mRNA? Do we in India, outside the big institutions, have the ability to translate a particular formula into quality production and thereby ramp up scale, which is what we need?
So, Vishnu, I think people at large should understand what is the difference between a synthetically, chemically synthesized drug and what is the difference between a biologic product like a vaccine or an antibody for that matter. It is very different. Okay. The time from lab to scale up in a small molecule is very short if you know what the process is. Even if you know what the process is for a biologic, it will be very long. So let me tell you, whatever you try to do, even technology transfer itself of a vaccine or a biologic product will take 9 to 12 months. That's how long it takes. So let's not underestimate the complexity of transferring technology and scaling up. So right now, let's face it, whether it is biologically who's been, who entered into a deal with J&J to manufacture the J&J vaccine, whether it is Novavax and AstraZeneca, which have got Serum Institute to produce their vaccines, the time taken to scale up has been quite long.
Yes.
So it's not easy. Even if today Serum Institute or Biological E, or even for that matter Sputnik, wants another company to produce it, let me tell you, it's not something that can happen in weeks. It'll take months.
Right. One of the interesting things in that brief U.S. statement is that the U.S., in addition to this recommendation, has said that they are willing to help facilitate the transfer of raw materials. They've already done that to a certain extent. It's already started coming in, I believe, for the Serum Institute. If that were to take place, the raw materials, the chemicals, whatever the ingredients are, could this process that you talk about happen faster?
I think if you get more raw materials and consumables coming from the US for many of these vaccine products, I think ramping up capacity would be very easy. Okay? I think that's what the whole challenge today is about, how do you get to the capacity that you need to get to? And today we clearly know that it is not about the lack of installed capacity. It is the lack of raw materials and consumables that is not enabling you to reach the installed capacity.
Sure. Ma'am, just one or two more questions. India has been a champion of generic drugs as well. When there was that entire debate on AIDS medication, India went ahead and took certain steps, seen to help millions around the world, you know, people who needed the drugs. In a situation like this, is there anything wrong with wanting a generic anti-COVID vaccine?
There is nothing wrong, Vishnu. There is nothing wrong. This is a global pandemic and there needs to be a global effort to get vaccines for everyone in the world.
So should we aim for generics is my
intent, this shared intent is very, very important. But what I'm trying to tell you is, it's easier said than done. This right now, it's absolutely the right thing to say for any government, because if you want a patent waiver, it is the right thing to do and the right thing to say. But whether it will achieve the goal of, you know, producing the adequate number of vaccines with which to vaccinate the world is the question I am debating. For example, let me tell you one of the most effective ways that models or methodologies that was found was by Gilead.
Yes.
Gilead actually started this whole concept of voluntary licenses.
Yes.
Voluntary licenses was for chemically synthesized small molecule drugs. So Remdesivir is under a voluntary license, right? So they basically licensed it out to 7 companies in India saying, please make this drug. This is the outline process. Produce it. These are the specs. And you're welcome to sell it. And that's what's happening in India today. Thanks to those voluntary licenses, we are actually able to supply Remdesivir at large scale during the second wave and during the first wave for that matter. So it's not that, you know, companies don't provide patent access in many, many ways. When you say a patent waiver, all I'm trying to say is just by waiving a patent will not help you to address.
No, I take that point completely. One final question to you. What about the investments which are actually made? Because there is that entire argument that pharma companies, big pharma, need big money for research to take place. Prior to this, you know better than anybody else how long it is for a vaccine to be actually made. There is huge research, there are manpower costs, infrastructure, science, this, that, and the other, before you even get to the stage of manufacture. So if that is taken away, if a patent is removed, which protects intellectual property and so many other things, then it discourages the industry from doing something, which it believes is the right step ahead. How does one balance that argument with what we are seeing now?
So let me counter that by saying that in this particular case, let's not forget that it is huge amounts of public funding that have enabled these companies to develop vaccines at speed and scale it up for manufacturing. So they've received a lot of public funding.
Right.
It is from BARDA, whether it is from various COVAX, whether it is from the European Union, you know, they've received a lot of funding and it's all public funding. So it's not like they have invested huge amounts to get these vaccines to the market. Secondly, they've also had a huge, huge help from the regulators to basically contract the regulatory time cycle to this kind of timeline. I mean, this vaccine has only taken 327 days from start to finish
right.
Get approved. So I don't think they can claim that, they've invested such a huge amount that they want their returns. I think, yes, of course, there's been very good science, very important science. And I congratulate all the scientists for what they've done to bring these vaccines to the fore. But to say that they made those investments and they need the return on these investments is not absolutely factually
correct.
Sure. So in this particular case, I think it is public funding. But I go back to the point that, look, it is not for want of patent restrictions that the capacities are not being, addressed. It is because there are genuine other stumbling blocks. And these are access to consumables and raw materials. So whilst it is a very good thing to do, which is to say that we are all agreeing to patent waivers, will it solve the problem of what we need to do today is the big question. And I don't agree that it is the solution.
All right, Bab, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. You simplify these things so easily. Thank you very much indeed, ma'am, for being with
Thank
us.
Thank you.